The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and to this, our online worship service. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. This morning, as you know, we are as close to you as your own home. So thank you for joining us today. I'm the Reverend Larry Pierce, minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We stand together today as a community that's willing to hold up a light of hope in each other's presence and to share that light with one another. We are an ever-expanding circle of compassion and care. So wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you this morning. We are a community that is dedicated to building a reservoir of strength through connection, reflection, and service. If you are joining us today for the first time or a new visitor, you'll notice that there will be a link in the chat box that links you to a virtual visitor card. This is a place where you can give us your contact information. We can get to know a little bit about you, and we have an opportunity to share more about ourselves. So you can click on that link anytime during the service and fill it out. And then we will follow up on adding you to our newsletter or whatever else you might request. Join me as I open our worship with these opening words, which were written by Barbara Zanotti. We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promise, land that can be. So may it be. And now Susan Hare will light our chalice and do our chalice lighting words this morning. Susan.
Good morning. The chalice lighting words this morning are from John Saxon, and they're called Listen, the Spirit is Calling. Listen. Can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It calls us in the silence and through the noise and busyness of our daily lives. It calls us in the brightness of the day and the darkness of the night, in times of hope and despair. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It doesn't matter what you call it, for it has no name and has many different names. The Spirit of life, the Spirit of love, the Spirit of compassion, the Spirit of hope, the Spirit of justice. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It's calling to you and to me. It's calling us to greater wholeness, greater connection, greater service, greater love. It's calling us to heal the brokenness within ourselves, in others, and in the world. It's calling us to live more deeply. It's calling us to beauty. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. And now Preston Littweller will light the peace lamp.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with you, and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song is hymn number 1060. We Sing of Hope and Joy. Christine Perry is our song leader and Isaac Strader is the accompanist. The lyrics will appear on your screen, and let's join together in this gathering song. It'll play through the tune first, since it might be unfamiliar to some of you, but then join in whenever you're ready.
Thank you.
This poem is written by John O'Donohue, called For Citizenship. In these times when anger is turned into anxiety and someone has stolen the horizons and mountains, our small emperors on parade never expect our indifference to disturb their nakedness. They keep their heads down and their eyes gleam with reflection from aluminum economic ground. The media wraps everything in a cellophane of sound, and the ghost surface of the virtual overlays the breathing earth. The industry of distraction makes us forget that we live in a universe. We have become converts to the religion of stress and its deity of progress, that we may have courage to turn aside from it all and come to kneel down before the poor, to discover what we must do, how to turn anxiety back into anger, how to find our way home.
So I stand before you today in the long tradition of Election Day sermons. It's a long tradition in this country where clergy gave sermons on Election Day, originally to the new elected government officials. And now these election sermons are given a week or so before an election. And it's common among some Unitarian Universalist clergy and clergy of other traditions. The late Reverend Forrest Church, who was minister at All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City, and reflecting on the origins of this tradition in New England in the 17th century, summarizes that there was a lot of fire and brimstone in many of those original sermons. And as he puts it, at least the listeners only burned for 2 long hours, only for 2 long hours. Nonetheless, by the end of the pastor's jeremiad, almost everyone who listened did in fact feel at least partially responsible for everything that was going wrong in the world. No more throw the bums out, the bums were us. Of course, I won't speak for 2 hours, and of course I can't predict or hope how you will feel after 20 minutes or so. And of course, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, besides many of us who have voted already this year and couldn't wait to vote and could not be swayed in any case. I'm not going to focus on our current political situation. It speaks loudly enough on its own. I do believe, however, that a minister that does not have the salt to say something about this moment that we are in should relinquish their pulpit and turn in their soul, their stole. Since for many of us, we would be violating our ordination vow if we did not speak to this moment. We can't any of us pretend that these are just normal times, because they ain't. We can't assume that there are not some profound moral and justice issues implicit in this moment that we're in, because there are. If you can imagine 2 bushes, one called religion and another called politics, topics that we are not supposed to talk about in polite company because we might offend one another, I want you to also imagine that each of those bushes has roots that go deep beneath the surface, and they intertwine. It is to that deeper place, not our typical surface comments, that my remarks come to you this morning. Speaking of roots, I stand before you today not just emboldened by this tradition of the Election Day sermon, but the deep, consistent trajectory of our own faith tradition. To say something about this moment that we are in, I cannot not say anything. After all, we are part of a religious tradition that focuses on this world. As one of my favorite hymns by Edwin Markham declares, here on the paths of every day, here on the common human way, is all the stuff the gods would take to build a heaven and to mold and make new Edens. Indeed, our religion is lived out on the path of the everyday before us, and not just the days gone by. Ours is a religion that is focused on this life, not just whatever afterlife there may be. Ours is a religion that focuses on what we can and must do, not totally dependent upon some intervention beyond ourselves. Ours is a religion that frankly has sometimes cowered, and yet oftentimes has risen to the occasion to speak truth to power in order to awaken in all of us our role in shaping life, not just for ourselves alone, but also for those in this society who are diminished, downtrodden, and denied their basic humanity and dignity. Ours is a tradition in which the words inspired by Unitarian Transcendentalist minister Theodore Parker, which were often summarized and quoted by Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. in this way, applies. We dedicate ourselves to that understanding and that prophetic imagination in which the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. My friends, the universe bends towards justice if only we can participate in that bending and not stand idly aside when this moment, this particular moment that we are in, calls us forth. Sure, there are political and religious leaders who use the Bible as a prop or a photo op for their own means, but it defiles those prophetic scriptures and those moral teachings to treat these scriptures as such. For my friends, as Unitarians and Universalists, we stand in the procession of the Jewish prophets and the prophetic teacher Jesus and others of other religious traditions, and we declare in one of the sources of our living tradition, as inscribed in the front of our UU hymnal, words and deeds of prophetic men and women which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. These are one of the sources of our living tradition as Unitarian Universalists. This is a source which we must attend to, listen to, and abide by, I feel, at this moment. You see, because this moment in history is not a time to put aside this source, but to listen for it and to strain to hear it in the midst of all the noise and showmanship that has masqueraded before us during this political season. If indeed we put the accent on what we can do as human beings with this one precious life that is our own to improve our condition, our own condition, and that of humanity, then we must raise our voice when others are silenced. Amplify the voices and the experiences of those most harmed in this historic moment. Join in solidarity when others are shut out. Say enough when things have gone too far. Our accent on human agency within religious traditions does not mean that we cut ourselves off, however, from the transcendent. Humanism does not mean for every one of us that we don't trust in God. It may mean for most of us that we want to bring more godliness into our everyday lives and into our world. The fact that we dare to hold a flickering hope in our own hearts that we can transcend the current conditions may be evidence enough of our capacities as humans to not succumb to despair, to not be distracted by deceit. That flickering flame of hope within our own individuals and collective hearts is a way that we can transcend and find a light and a way towards transcending this moment in which so much is not working for so many. One of my favorite psychologists, who's obviously no longer alive, Abraham Maslow, some of you may have known him or his work, in his riveting lecture at the Unitarian Church in San Francisco in 1967. So that's, we're talking ancient history. He talked of the fact that when we care for something more than ourselves, that is transcendence. He stated it this way: my satisfaction with achieving or allowing justice is not within my own skin. It does not lie along my arteries. It's equally outside and inside. Therefore, it has transcended the geographic limitations of the self. Sure, we can and we have often succumbed to the pressures in our culture to look out for number one, ourself, in order to keep our own privilege and position intact. Yet something calls us again and again toward transcendence in the way that Maslow is talking about it. In spite of all those forces and the countless funds that uphold the interest of the few over the welfare of the many, there still beats within our human breasts the deeper caring for others and for one another, that however faint, it is still there and it is beating right now. Perhaps you too can feel it within yourself in this moment. Perhaps you can feel it awakened in this moment in yourself. We see it surface fiercely in times of tragedy, we feel that care for compassion for others most often in those moments, but it's always there. My deep care for that which is beyond ourselves as well. Think about it. Even in our own lifetimes, we have transcended earlier ways of thinking and being and behaving. Likewise, though we can be present, can present so much evidence, I should say, to the contrary, still in the life of humankind, we still, I believe, have the capacity to transcend the limiting social conditions of our time, to save this earth that is our one home, to afford dignity and rights to those who are not part of the dominant caste. This is our holy task in this moment. Sure, our faith in humanity and human transcendence can waver and wane, as can our faith in a divine being. There is much in our world that can conspire us to lose faith, not just in God, but in the good, and also in humanity. Yet it can be awakened now and then. Perhaps it was awakened for you this week when you heard that 545 children have been separated from their parents at the Mexican border because of the inhumane deportation policies. Does our moral sense of what is right get aroused at news like that? I sure hope so. And I pray that we will never, ever, ever become numb to the cries of these children. May we hear them. May we hear them. Sometimes, however, we create more problems for ourselves as Unitarian Universalism. Sometimes our focus on individualism and freedom of thought has swerved us towards the dangerous perspective that anything goes. I have been inspired recently by our transcendentalist ancestors who, though deeply dedicated to their own personal growth and personal freedom, did not see this as a license to not respond to the cries of the dispossessed, the poor, the downtrodden, the disenfranchised of their time. They did not, because of their response to their own personal development, they did not think that every view was equally as important because their own sensibilities to what was moral and right and proper for the human becoming and possibility was a guide for them. These transcendentalists, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Bronson Alcott, Henry David Thoreau, Theodore Parker, others like Margaret Fuller, Louisa May Alcott, many were Unitarian ministers or sometimes the rebellious children of Unitarian parents. They were more than literary or philosophical figures, and I think they have a lot to teach us about this intertwining of the personal and social concern, of personal development and social progress. I've learned that the deeper their inner exploration, the more pronounced was their engagement with the social conditions of their time. My former colleague, the Unitarian Universalist minister, John Burens, in his book, Conflagration, How the Transcendentalists spoke to the American struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, argues that even though they practice self-culture, what today we would call self-development, they also had adopted a categorical imperative in their ethical thought. As Buren writes, this requires seeing and treating others, including children, the poor, women, and the enslaved, not as mere objects, but as subjects, as moral agents, whose spiritual and moral potential was to be given opportunity and encouraged. So their sensibility to their own personal development allowed them to broaden that circle of care and compassion and action towards those who were impacted by the social conditions of their time and were not given the same kind of arena in which to develop their own personal self as freely and as easily. Burens continues, their ethical stance gave rise to nothing less than the start of a second American Revolution, demanding an end of slavery, greater equality for women, and a greater social responsibility for all. For them and for us, There can be no false dichotomy towards what is personal and social. There can be no false dichotomy between what is spiritual and what is of this world, because we are on this path of the everyday. We are on this path in which we must transform the world through our care and through our compassion. So I feel that really the only way that we can truly embrace this moment that we are in is to move away from these separations that often have their hold on us, a separation between the heart and the mind, between spirit and the everyday, so that we can see our holy tasks as the tasks that actually lie before us at this time and at this moment in history. But my friends, we cannot transcend what we do not fully grasp about our current situation. This moment requires not some incremental change, not just some small steps in the right direction, not some tweaking and some twittering our way forward. For recent months have dramatically exposed what we would rather not see. An inspiration and a conviction has arisen in me as I have been delving into the book by Isabel Wilkerson, Cast, The Origins of Our Discontent. I believe it gives us a clearer image of not just the complexity of the situation that we're in, but also of the urgency. She uses, however, a simple metaphor of a house. And I want to share this with you as a way for us to get a sense of the actual situation that we're in that calls us towards the transcendence of our current social condition in order to bring it to a new place of development, a new place of progress. She writes, "America is an old house. We can never declare the work is over. Wind, flood, drought, and human upheavals batter a structure that is fighting whatever flaws were left unattended in the original foundation. When you live in an old house, and many of us may have this experience, you may not want to go into the basement after a storm to see what the rains have wrought. Choose not to look, however, at your own peril. The owner of that old house knows that whatever you are ignoring will never go away. Whatever you are ignoring will never go away. Whatever is lurking will fester, whether you choose to look at it or not. Ignorance is no protection from the consequences of inaction. Whatever you are wishing away," she writes, "will gnaw at you until you gather the courage to face what you would rather not see." I wonder, do we have that kind of collective courage in this moment? Do we have the capacity to cultivate and elicit and bring forth that courage in one another? That courage that is so much needed, not just for our own sakes, but for the sake of our common humanity. She continues, "We in the developed world are like homeowners who inherited a house and a piece of land that is beautiful on the outside, but whose soil is unstable loam and rock, heaving and contracting over generations, cracks patched with the deeper ruptures, waved away for decades, centuries even. We are the heirs to whatever is right or wrong with it. We did not erect the uneven pillars or the joists, but they are ours to deal with right now. And any further deterioration is in fact in our hands." So my friends, we have cracks in the foundation that is our country that have for centuries, four centuries in fact, have upheld some belief that some lives matter more than others. My friends, we cannot just apply a second coat of paint on this house that is America and pretend it will be okay. My friends, we have cracks that we have either ignored or applied some cosmetic repairs to for decades. And now we realize that the reasons for the gaps between the very rich and those with moderate or poor incomes are more exposed than ever before. Merely shoring up the rich with more tax breaks has not trickled down like waters of economic justice for all. My friends, we cannot just apply a second coat of paint on this house that is America and ignore the structural inequalities that exist in this house. My friends, we have toxins in this house that will not go away and will only spread. We can't ignore science and the impact of the climate crises. Our fantasies to the contrary are just that, fantasies. My friends, we cannot apply a second coat of paint to this house that is America and say that it is just in our imagination. We can't just step over the rotting wood just because we've become so accustomed to doing so. My friends, we cannot just apply a second coat of paint on this house that is America, and by doing so, say that this American house will be great because we said so. We often tell each other to vote our values, but I wonder, is that enough in our time? It's not just about our values. It is our values, but it's not just about our values. It's also about facing the actual conditions of this American house that we are in. We need to vote our values. Sorry. We need to vote our values and also hear the voices of those we have not often heard. For the children who have been separated from their parents at the Mexican border, may we hear them. For those who were not protected soon enough from this pandemic, those who have died, those who have lost loved ones, those who fear for their own health, may we hear them. For those who live in fear about where next month's rent will come from, may we hear them. For those who, just because of the pigmentation of their skin, are constantly having to prove their worth, protect their children from injustices that may come their way, may we hear them. For those who suffer mental illness and now live in more anxiety and depression that is not of their own making, but exacerbated by those who think they are above it all or proudly declare that they are immune, may we hear them. For future generations who depend upon us to transcend current conditions because it is the moral and right thing to do, may we hear them. So in the words of the prelude this morning, which came from Ragtime, a pretty poignant point part of the story where the character has been accused of causing a riot because his wife had dared to shake the hand of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. She was killed and beaten by the police. And so in this final scene, he leaves the legacy of his song and his anthem, a legacy not just for his moment, but for us as well. Surprisingly enough, we see the same, and maybe not so surprisingly, given the history of our country. We see some of this same kind of brutal injustice occurring on our own city streets, this same kind of anti-Black violence that occurs too many times. But yet within the flickering flame of his own heart, he shares whatever hope is there with the people in that scene with him, and maybe with us as well. Make them hear you. Let it echo far and wide, he sings. Make them hear you. Make them hear you how justice was our battle and how justice was denied. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And so, my friends, what voices will we hear beyond just our own as we move through this moment in history? What voices will we amplify as we move through this moment in history. Whatever happens in the election, the work that I have just outlined, I feel in this sermon, is still our work to do. So may we join together with that belief in that flickering flame of hope within our own hearts and our collective heart. And may we bend the world towards justice. So may it be. Amen. So this is the part in our service where we take a time to reflect first individually in ourselves and reflect on what it is that is burdening our hearts and our own spirit today. Maybe a concern for ourselves, for others, or our world. Let's hold these in the sanctuary of our heart for a moment. Let them not disappear too quickly without being held. It's also a time for us to hold the joys within our own heart and our own spirit, to let those nurture and cultivate in us some sense of hope, some sense in promise, some sense of gratitude. So take a moment to reflect upon your own individual sorrows or joys, or the sorrows or joys that you hold for another. Also, this is a time where we linger in the sermon just a little longer, where we allow ourselves to glean whatever insight, whatever leading that we've gained from this reflection together. And we share that with one another if we choose. So in a moment, following this interlude, a musical interlude, take some time to reflect. And if you want to share a joy, you want to share a sorrow or a concern, or you want to share with us a gleaning from this sermon, please do so following this musical interlude, and you'll get more instructions on how to do so. So let's begin by reflecting together.
And now, after extinguishing the chalice, please join us in saying these words in unison by Langston Hughes, which will be followed by our closing song, "We'll Build a Land." I believe that these words will appear on the slide. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow.